Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
I'm Chase Rolfson with Rubline Marketing.
This is Jeff Lindsay.
This is Michael Pitt.
Hey, everybody, it's John Dudley from Knock On TV.
Hey, guys, this is Jared Scheffler from Whitetail Adrenaline.
Hi, I'm Taylor Drury from Drury Outdoors.
Hey, this is Nick Munt from Bone Collector.
Hey, this is Melissa Bachman.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter Podcast.
Working Class Bow Hunter Podcast.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
You're listening to the Working Class Bow Hunter. That's right. This is a podcast for Billy Joe Lunchbucket, the working man, just like me and you. My name's Travis T. Bone Turner from The Bone Collector. Thank you for tuning in.
Nobody pushes the envelope like Working Class Bow Hunter.
It's really, really not that good.
Hello and welcome back to the Working Class Bowhunter Podcast. We're all in the studio right now, myself, Kurt Geyer,
Doug Schmidt,
Eric Common,
Austin Chandler,
Ross Bigger,
and we're really sober. And that's just the truth. We just had our garage party, and I feel like we're still, you know, we're all over 30. Are you over 30, Doug?
Not yet.
A little bit of recovery.
We all look like we're over 30.
Come to shoot.
And, man, it just changes. But, yeah, we had our annual garage party. Thanks to everyone who came out. That's like our private little just annual celebration that we do. Shout out to Ross for hosting in his
gargantuan Ross and Robin, yep.
Club 200.
Yeah, man, that was fun.
It was epic.
Yeah.
Awesome party.
Yeah, it was awesome, man. It was a good time. So this is our first time back in the studio from that.
It's,
so
it's taken this long to recover.
The older you get, the longer it takes, man. I'm telling you.
Ugh. I know. It's
while
it's,
we're drinking.
Yeah, I mean, we're not drunk, but we're working on it.
Baby steps.
Thank you for being here. Thanks for tuning in. If you gave us a rating or a review anywhere you listen, that's awesome. If you haven't, much appreciated if you would.
Go do it.
It always helps. iTunes, whatever. Just go in there and say, like, good podcast, so that's all you got to do. And
hit, I like cheese. Who cares?
Hit that five star. Yeah, we really don't care. It'd be funny if it was random. Or just put something nice. Is it that hard? WorkingClassBowHunter.com. I'm trying to think what we got coming up. Iowa Classic is on the way. Then we will be in Columbus, Ohio. Then the weekend after that, the last weekend in March, we'll be at Wisconsin Dells, Wisconsin for the last show of the year. June 12th is our annual archery shoot at Galesburg Archery Club. Galesburg, Illinois, pretty much. All that information's on our website. What else? I'm trying to just think of some quick announcements, blast through them real fast. But
the hunt giveaway?
Yeah, we're doing a veteran hunt giveaway through Dirt Nap Outdoors. They were awesome and just said, hey, help us give a hunt away. That is also on our website. If you hit the contact tab, you can just find all that right there, everywhere you need to go. And so that's, I think, our announcements now. We're having a
special edition shirt to come into the Iowa Classic.
Yep.
I think we're going to make one special for Ohio and Wisconsin as well. But I don't know if those will ever make the store, so you have to be at the show to get them, kind of like an exclusive deal.
Show only.
Yeah, come on and drink a beer with us. It's a good excuse.
Yep. Buy us a beer.
Buy some beer. Buy us beer.
Yeah, buy us a beer.
And then buy a shirt from us because... Yeah.
That'd be really nice of you.
Yeah.
I'd really appreciate it.
Support the habit.
Yeah, support the habit. The podcast is presented by HHA Sports. Always thankful for them. Scott Bakken's a good dude. He was at the garage party, and I say Scott Bakken with HHA because he's our boy at HHA Sports. Been partners of ours for a long time. Leader in single pin sights. Now stabilizers and rests. Check them out. American made. Come with a lifetime warranty. It's pretty awesome. It's hard to argue with right there. Also, Scent Crusher, Loophole Optics, Thermacy, Victory Archery, Gator Outdoors. I think Wade changed the promo code. Oh, yeah, WCB15 is the HHA code. But I think Wade changed the Gator Outdoors promo code from WCB10 to WCB25.
25 now.
So he decided to step her way up, which is pretty cool. So, you know, support a small business, a growing business, and good people right there. WCB25 at GatorOutdoors.com. Also, my daughter screaming in the background. Sorry about that. Studio's in my house. Rogue Ridge e-bikes and the Grind turkey decoys. I'm nervous to get my bike here because I'm afraid I'm just going to wreck it in the snow and break my collarbone, but I'm going to go for it anyway.
Full speed ahead.
I'm going to try and find at least one shed off that thing.
And those things just look sexy. I'm looking at that picture. That color is sweet.
Oh, yeah. They come in Moss Yoke Bottomland, I believe is the camo pattern. I get all my Mossy Oaks mixed up.
I like that tan color.
Yeah, I like the tan color too.
The Mossy Oak I like because you could ride that thing to your tree and just hide it.
Right.
So I'm all into that. The decoys. So we have what we call Turkey Palooza, and we have these decoys are being put to work. We have, I don't know how many groups of people that were all going out for Turkey Palooza weekend.
It's turning into a party.
Camera guys. Yeah, the good and bad thing, you can only hunt birds till one in Illinois, but it just means we get to start the barbecue a little early.
It's actually a good thing, really.
Yeah, mushroom hunting, mushroom a little hunting. Whiskey drinking. Yeah. It's going to be a good time.
A real shed hunting?
Oh, yeah. If there's any left by then, they've already dropped on the farms we're going to be looking at, or most of them have.
Yeah. Also, big time, code WCB2021. Man, you guys got all your supplemental feed, and they need it right now. The deer are hurting. Yep. It is cold. It's been cold. We have a ton of snow, and luckily, you guys in Iowa get to supplemental feed your deer.
That's right.
Be dumping it out Friday.
You bastards. I'm jealous of that. I feel bad for them right now, especially in this. It's like, Illinois, get your head out of your ass. Let's go.
Yeah, it's kind of an ethical thing at this point.
Yeah, it's freaking, what was it, negative 14 the night of our party?
Yeah.
It was negative 20 when I woke up this morning at 3:30.
No kidding.
Yeah.
That's too cold.
Yikes.
Way too cold.
No for me, dog.
Yeah, that's sad. I feel bad for him. Big Time, WCB2021. That code works for everything at Big Time. They are also the title sponsor for our shoot. So if you come to the shoot, you'll probably walk away with a bag of Big Time. They have a ton of giveaways. So come on out. Old Barn Taxidermy. Oh, man. It's cool. Looking at like a place like Ross's and thinking about like the taxidermy work you'd have done and like the possibilities that get open. But my bear mount's right around the corner. I talked to Sam today, the owner of Old Barn. We're going to get together and pick the winner of the WCB Deerhead giveaway.
I forgot about that.
Very cool.
Yeah, I talked to him today. I was like, you want to just pick one and get going so we can get on the show? He's like, let's do it together. He's like, we'll draw out of a hat and
cool.
do it all.
Awesome.
So
that works good.
Old Barn Taxidermy. So, yeah, that's coming down the line. Doug, you got a veteran shout-out?
I do. This veteran shout-out is brought to you by Operation HHA USA. And their goal is to achieve and create a sense of community for veterans and active military through archery and the outdoors. And they do a bunch of shooting events in Wisconsin, 3D shoots. Should be coming up here pretty soon once it actually gets nice out.
Yeah, we'll this summer.
We'll have to get the details for all that.
Nice weather. Summer. HHAUSA.org.
Yep. So this veteran shout-out is it's a little random. It's not really it is a veteran shout-out for himself, but at the same time it's not. Submitted by David Shiletto, and it even says, this is not a veteran shout-out, but you mind helping me out. He's in the United States Marine Corps. It says, yes, I'm a vet, so I guess I'm qualified to message y'all here, but I need help getting a hold of the 100 Box Club. I'm one of the 25-year-olds from a beautiful world of way better Iowa, Southern Illinois, where Bushlight Diesel is boss. Kurt, stop being a pussy.
Oh, okay.
But I'm stuck in Maryland working for the Marine Corps as a dirt helicopter mechanic and have no form of social media, so I can't get a hold of them on Facebook, and I can't find a phone number. I'm just trying to change my address for my subscription, but the damn website says they don't have an email on file. If you could get a phone number, that would be awesome. Also, I'm a huge fan of the show. Y'all are doing it right, and I love how you guys capitalize on ethics. Fuck poachers. P.S. I'm also hammered and decided this is the best way to fix my 100 Box Club subscription problem. Y'all are killers. Thanks a lot. Sorry for this probably misspelled shit.
We're having a blast with this.
Thanks for submitting that, Dave.
Hey, thanks for your service, dude.
That's our people right there.
We'll try helping you out.
Hey, you mind forwarding me that email so I can get them taken care of?
Yeah, we'll help you out here.
P.S. I'm hammered.
Thanks, Dave, for your service.
I'm sure. Glad he clarified that because we'd have just been like, what the fuck is this guy doing?
I'm sure he didn't think that was actually going to make the veteran shout out. But
that's awesome.
I'm glad it did.
Here you are, Dave. This is for you.
Shout out to you, Dave. This beer's for you.
Keep on keeping on, brother.
That's awesome.
Oh my gosh, that's hilarious. Well, we have a podcast with our old friend here in store, Travis T-Bone Turner. Pretty cool.
Mr. Billy Joe Lunchbucket himself.
Yeah, returning guest. It's just kind of mind-blowing that someone of his stature and magnitude and personality and persona is willing to come back to our show. It is cool. It is really cool. We're kind of joking when we do that, but he's a good dude. I feel like we've got to become friends with him over the years, and it's always good to catch up with them. So thank you for being here. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoy. All right, back on the podcast, we have our boy Travis T-Bone Turner from Bone Collector. What's up, man?
Hey, guys. Man, I feel like I don't know. You know how when you go to Subway and you get 10 Subways and then you get one for free? We got to be getting up there close to 10 or something like that. I mean,
you're hitting your punch card.
I know. I'm expecting a 12-pack of beer or something out of the deal.
I think we'll have to do that if we ever get to see each other at a show again, but I think things are kind of going back to normal, so I'll dig your punch card out of that little spiral deal and pull it out and see where we're at.
Perfect, yep, the working class bow hunter punch card, that'd be great.
Yeah, you get a case of Bush in A.
Yeah.
It's like, nice. I wonder how, I mean, we were kind of counting before the podcast, so this has got to be, I don't know, 6 or 7 episodes you've done with us, something like that.
I know it, man. They're so fun, yeah. I mean, or like Waddell said, and then especially the ones that we've done at the ATA when we're all sitting there face-to-face and as a big group. God, we have so much fun. It could be 3 hours long, no problem. We have such a good time doing those.
Yeah, it's nice doing that. Like, we get, you know, normally do them on the phone, but we get to connect. It just, the conversation flows so much differently when you're in person, and you get the nonverbal expressions of like stories and just general conversation.
Yep, it certainly adds to it. It sure does.
But this is a close second, man. We'll take what we can get, but we do appreciate you coming back. We figured the first time, way, way early on, we would have scared you off, but apparently we just weren't wild enough.
No, man, I appreciate you guys having me. I thoroughly enjoy it. Y'all do such a great job, and before long, we're going to be scaring number 500. So, you know, hats off to you guys and congratulations for all the continued success. I know all the, you know, we use the terminology still to this day, Billy Joe Lunch Buckets out there. They love the podcast.
Yeah. And thanks for doing that for our intro. It's pretty cool. So still use it to this day. But man, let's talk about you a little bit. Let's talk about this season, man. You're on fire.
No kidding.
Yeah, here in Georgia, I mean, I was fortunate enough to kill 2, you know, great bucks here in Georgia, and I've been telling everybody, they're so nocturnal down here, you know, versus like some of the Midwest deer. Well, whitetails are nocturnal, period, anywhere, but they really are down here in the South, and I feel like I killed a unicorn and a vampire all in the same year, I swear. But, I attribute a lot of the success to COVID, to be honest with you, because we travel so much in July and August doing, you know, appearances at expos and stuff. And I got to spend a lot more time at home. I got to spend more time running trail cameras and, you know, dialing everything in here at home, and plus my farm in Kansas. And I got to go out there for a whole 10 days and scout and line things up and get everything dialed in out there, too. So, I mean, I'd killed 3 of the best bucks I've ever killed in my whole life before October 10th. I was done. So I was like, wow, man.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That is cool.
Yeah, somebody.
Go ahead.
Somebody had to pay for all the COVID crap we've been going through, huh?
No kidding. I mean, that's kind of funny, like, especially with, like, media outlets. Like, I feel we probably benefited, too, as far as numbers go with COVID, because everyone's doing stuff where podcasts fit in, like, at home or at work or getting more into it wherever they can if they weren't working or whatever. But it's cool. Like, hunting, it didn't change anything for people who like to go outside.
Yeah.
So.
No, not. Yeah, no, we've seen a huge resurgence of that, you know, I mean. Within the industry, like bow manufacturers are, you know, they're selling as many bows as they ever have. Guns, well, of course, you can see that. I think that's a little political and COVID, but
right.
Guns and ammo and such like that. But like Polaris and the boats, so many boats are sold. It's been one of the best years ever. People say, hey, you know, that's a safe way to do distancing. And, you know, I think I'm going to rekindle my old flame of being outside, and people that were thinking about doing stuff outside, they're just going ahead and doing it. So I'm trying to look in the positive aspect of it, and maybe we sold a whole bunch more hunting licenses this year, and we'll do so in upcoming years too because of it.
Yeah, I think so. I definitely think so. Talking about killing your three biggest bucks before October 10th, you said, I can't even imagine what that would be like, but we sort of asked this question to Nick, and I want to kind of throw this to you as well. Like, with all the hunts you guys get to do and as many animals as you get to put arrows through, I know I see you guys kill, like, a big animal, and you might mention, like, this is my biggest whitetail or this or that or whatever the species is. Do you ever feel like you're going to just hit that cap and, like, there it is, that's the biggest one I'll ever kill? Like, does that go through your head often when you kill an animal?
Oh, yeah, all the time. I mean, I've never been I mean, I can kind of speak for Nick and Michael, but I can certainly speak for myself. Like, I like to shoot too much. I'm looking for broadside more than I am big cracks and stuff like that. This year just happened to be, you know, the first serve. They were some really good trophies, and I was able to get an arrow in them. But I mean, if you've watched the show, we've kind of built our whole career on, you know, killing. If they've got kind of enough birthdays, we're apt to put an arrow through them. So. We're not a Lee Lukowski. We don't hold out for the 190 or 200 every time. It's more of a first come. I will kill a 190 or 200, but he better be the first one down the trail.
So let's talk about these. I mean, we don't have to break them down too much because everyone's going to get to watch them eventually. But let's break down these three bucks, if you don't mind.
Yeah, no, not at all. My pleasure. The Kansas, I bought this piece of property with my buddy Pete. We bought it about I think it was January of last year, and we knew it was mixed in with property. We had 3,000 acres that we can hunt, and it's mixed in the middle of it. It's 240 acres, and we were getting pictures of this deer early on, like June, July. I knew he was going to be something special, and it got towards the end of middle of August, and went in there and set up three different spots on this 240 acres, and this deer was so regular, three times a day, daylight from about the 15th of August all the way up to opening day of deer season was on the 14th of September. And you know, normally I've never hunted Kansas that time of year. Usually we're doing an elk hunt or something out west, or definitely a Kentucky hunt. And, and opening day of Georgia season's right then, too. So I wasn't really concerned about Kansas because we always think Midwest. You're always going to go last part of October, first part of November, and that's just the time we go. And I thought, well, I said, man, this deer is so regular. Why am I going to wait and try to chase him in November? I mean, he's just doing everything clockwork. I got to go get him while he's, coming out in daylight. So we had set up all those blinds and stuff like that, and he was coming so regular. I went out there. This was during muzzleloader season, but you could hunt with a bow. I had a bow tag, and then you just have to wear orange. So I had an orange hat, orange vest on, and first day didn't see him. He did come in after dark, the cameras told us, but then the second day he came in light enough for me to shoot him, but not light enough for the camera. So watched him feed at 20 yards for 35 minutes, 180 inch buck, and I'm like, oh man, you got to be kidding me.
You're a stronger man than I am.
Yeah, no shit.
Oh, I know. And
I'd then, have the worst TV show of all time, though, just for the record.
Yeah, it'd be in the dark. Yeah. Yeah. All it would be is just a bunch of great recoveries, wouldn't it?
Yeah. No, probably not even that, just be flashlight footage.
See that? There goes Illuminati.
Yeah, see that?
Yep.
Smoked him.
I swear it was legal shooting light.
Yep. So, but then the third night he came out like an hour before last light and got good footage of him and, you know, shot him and made lucky enough to make a good shot. And he went about 70 yards and piled up. So at that time, he was about three quarters of the way out of velvet. So he's got a little bit of velvet, makes it really good character. He grosses 181. And that's my biggest buck ever. You know, as long as I've been hunting, he grossed 181, and I was just tickled to death. But while I was in Kansas, I'm getting trail cam pictures back here at home of two bucks that I've been watching for 2 months. I had a big typical that was never on my place. He was always on the neighbor's place, and I was able to do some scouting. I actually watched him about a mile and a half away, thinking he'll never be on my place, and then all of a sudden, like 3 weeks before hunting season, he starts showing up on my place just regular, and I'm like, this deer's a roamer. He has been for years, and I said, he's not going to stay here long. So I got back home, and I seen both of the two deer that I ended up killing. I was targeting them. I'd let the real big Don Typical, I'd let him go last year, and I knew he was 5.5 last year, and he was big, but both of these deer, I don't know if it's just the perfect storm, they both put on easily 25 inches
this
year. And I'm not saying, I promise you, yeah. And we need to tell that story too. But, and I can't, you know, I don't want to sit here and say, oh, it's the feed I'm feeding them. I mean, I think it's a combination of everything. Just the age was right. It was the right year, the right amount of rain in the spring, low stress levels. You know, I did feed them. I've been feeding all year round for the last 3 years. It's about to break me. And I got to hide money that I spend on feed from my wife and all that kind of stuff. And
getting that bad, horrible, huh?
Yeah, it's horrible. But anyway, I think all of the above just kind of added to it. And I couldn't believe that they jumped that much. You know, I've heard people say that in the past. Yeah, this deer jumped 30 inches this year. And I'm like, yeah, right. I don't see that down here. But both of these deer did just about jump that much. But they were both showing themselves in daylight. And I'm like, golly, I got to get home. And the big non-typical, where he was on my property, there was just no way to bow hunt him. There was no way that I could get in there without boogering him. I might have got one, maybe two hunts in, and then I know I would have pushed him off my property and or forced him to be nocturnal because he's 6.5 now, and he wouldn't have had it. So
low tolerance for bullshit on a deer like that.
What's that?
I said a deer like that has low tolerance for bullshit.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And being as he was, you know, right on the line and right close, I felt like, man, I just can't play with this deer. So before I'd went to Kansas, I'd set up a ground blind. I had a redneck blind, you know, because we can rifle hunt down here. And I had some areas that he was coming in that I could shoot 200 or 300 yards. But rifle season doesn't come in until October. And I was like, I'm not going to be able to bow hunt him where I was at because I would have ended up screwing him up. And I say that because, you know, we're trying to film it as well. It's not just like going there and kill him. You're trying to film it as well. So I put up a pop-up blind because I couldn't shoot 200 or 300 yards with a muzzleloader, or I didn't feel comfortable to. And then if he came out at that last light, you know, you can't see 200 or 300 yards. So I needed to get closer, but I couldn't get bow close. So I popped up a blind about 80 to 100 yards away from where he was in the vicinity where he was, and just let him get real used to it. It's been there since the 1st of September. I never even went into that area, you know, other than just to plant the food plots, and was just going to wait it out till October the 10th, which was muzzleloader. I was like, you know, and if he starts showing up somewhere else, I might try for him with a bow, but if not, I'm just going to wait till muzzleloader season and just keep him low pressure and keep him happy, give him everything he wants. And then this other deer, it was on the 25th of September, and this is a big typical 10, and that's my son's birthday. So my son's like, yeah, we want to go to dinner tomorrow night. I'm like, okay. And I'd hunted two nights because this deer was daylight, and we didn't see him. We'd seen plenty of deer, but not him. So it's on my son's birthday, and my camera guy wasn't going to be here, and it was his birthday. I said, we're not going to hunt tonight. So on the way home, my wife and my son said, Dad, we're hungry now. Can you just meet us at the restaurant? And that was like at 3:30, 3:45, and I'm like, hey, I wasn't even hungry. I said, yeah, I'll meet you.
So we went and I'm ate. Starving.
Yeah, we went and ate and sat there, and we got done. And, you know, now, you know, it's staying daylight till 8:30, 8:45 still. It's summertime hours. And I said, hey, guys, I said, what are we doing tonight? You know, if my son would have said, hey, we're going to do this, we want to watch a movie. And I said, you mind if I go hunting? He said, no, you can go, Dad. I said, I'll be back right back at dark. So
that's awesome.
I said, Yeah, I asked my son if he wanted to go, and he didn't want to go. So I filmed myself. I took my camera. I was in a red. I was going to be in a redneck blind anywhere where I was at. Set up the camera. He came out a solid hour before dark. I was hunting in blue jeans. I took a black shirt and blue jeans. I was thinking, this ain't going to happen, but I got to try, you know, because he's been so consistent. And the wind was right. I had the Ozonics. I did everything. I kept the windows closed. And this is, you know, Georgia heat, the 25th of September. I'm 90 degrees. I'm smoking really, really hot in there like a sauna. And he comes out an hour anyway. Plays cat and mouse, and we actually just did the interviews for the show the other day, and I had 23 minutes of pre-roll of him under 60 yards, which is unheard of, and before he would, you know, come into where I could crack a window and shoot him, so I had plenty of footage of him. But anyway, he come into 23 yards, and I got an arrow in him, and he ran 40 yards and died, and he ended up 161 is what he grossed as a 10-pointer.
Damn.
And then while I'm filming him and waiting on him, I'm getting pictures of daylight of the big non-typical not 400 yards away at the same time.
Wow. No kidding.
And these two deer were never on the same camera. As far as I know, it was almost like they took my property, divided it in half, and I never got them on the same camera. They never were in the same areas. It was just like they divvied it up. You know,
they had an agreement.
They had an agreement.
Well, big bucks will do that. Makes sense.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. Or there was a restraining order against both of them or something like that.
They had something
crazy ex-girlfriends.
Yeah, so then I started working on the other cameras. I had 8 trail cameras out trying to pattern this non-typical as to where he was coming, because he was like once every 3 or 4 days I'd get a daylight picture, but other than that it was all nighttime stuff. And I was trying to, like, where he would come to, I'd have protein feeders up closer to the road or to my house. And then where he was bedding at, I was thinking that he was bedding. I started going and putting little appetizer piles out there, because you can bait here in Georgia. So I'd put appetizer piles, and I would catch him, you know, on his way, because I knew he'd be right after dark, he'd be at the protein feeders. And I started working my way towards his bedding area without going in it. And I put the little appetizer piles, and I found out exactly where it was, and it was within the vicinity of that ground blind that I put up a month before, and I was just waiting on October 10th. It was nowhere, and got no pictures of him in anywhere that I could bow hunt. I would have definitely boogered him up for sure. So opening day of muzzleloader was, I may be lying to you, October 10th was opening day of muzzleloader, and it was pouring rain here. The wind was wrong, so I didn't even hunt. It was killing me not to go, but I didn't go. And then the next evening, we went, and sure enough, like 25 minutes before dark, he came out and shot him, and he ended up grossing 186. So,
God damn, man.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah, from a Georgia buck, yeah. So,
and that's kind of unheard of down there, right?
Oh, it is, yeah. He had 25 inches of non-typical points on one side, and he's only 13 3/4 inches inside spread.
But wow.
Holy smokes.
Extremely tall and really long main beams and stuff. It was the one that I sent you one of the pictures there, Kurt.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Yeah, and I know I'm real excited about talking about this, but I'm not, I mean, I hope it doesn't come across as bragging, but you just, you know, and you guys can relate to this. I'm sure people out there that are listening, You're proud of any deer you kill, no matter where you go, if you go with an outfitter or whatever. But these, I had tremendous amount of sweat equity, which actually helps with the pride factor, meaning, like, you know, I didn't just show up at a Texas place. And not that I'm not proud of that, and anybody shouldn't be proud of that, but, you know, if the pride factor's a 0 to a 10, you know, when it's you doing all the homework, you're doing all the sweat equity, you're putting in the time and the camera, food and everything, it takes it from a 5 or 6 pride factor on up there to a 9 or 10. So
yeah.
So I hope by me, you know, explaining that, that's the way people are taking it, not like I'm the baddest hunter around. I just happen to be the luckiest hunter.
Well, you played it right too. I mean, every match that you have with a deer is a chess match, but you had 3 different chess matches going on in the same season, and you played it all perfectly. So kudos to you. I mean, that couldn't have been played any better. Doesn't sound like.
Yeah, it was, it was really, I mean, I was like, me and my buddy Brian, we was like, man, if we can just get one of these deer, you know, I will feel completely blessed, because it is so hard to kill a Pope and Young in Georgia. It really is. And I was like, if we could just get one of these deer, I would feel so blessed. And actually, we got you're only allowed 2 bucks here, but I've got another one that's pushing 150, a 10-pointer that I think he's mature enough to kill. I think he's 5.5, but my buddy Brian thinks he's 4.5. So he said, he goes, let's just lay off on him and we'll see. You know, so we let him go, and he's over on the property. So if I'd have had 3 tags, I potentially could have killed 3 really good bucks here this year. So
that's awesome, man. Well, what's cool about it, and yeah. I was going to bring that up. You kind of touched on it a little bit, like the sweat equity in it. And, you know, Bone Collector is probably the biggest show out there, and you guys are probably some of the biggest, most down-to-earth personalities out there. And so I think it's easy for people to be like, oh, everything they do is just they get there and kill and leave. Like, you probably get that a lot on social media, just people being assholes. But they probably don't get to hear some of the extra details. I'm sure you guys show it enough, but, you know, you did these on your own property, which is awesome.
Yeah, and I mean, I talk about it some on social media if you follow me, but honestly, it's got to the point in my life where I love hunting, I really do, but I get more enjoyment out of the land management, the skid steer work, the clearing for food plots, and the tractor work, and I get as much out of that as I do the killing of it, because that opens it up to those people, and I feel like a broken record saying this, but those people that hinge their whole hunting on them killing a certain deer, they're missing the point, man. I mean, yeah. Hunting is us sitting here, you know, drinking a couple cold beers, talking about our hunts and doing like what we're doing now. It's us going shopping at, you know, some of the stores. It's getting in the backyard, you know, shooting tournaments and you know, ribbing each other and studying maps. And it's something every day that's towards it, you know, that you know, kind of scratches your itch every day. And fortunately, you know, I've been able to, you know, buy a few pieces of equipment, and man, I'm telling you, just sitting in a cockpit of a skid steer or a tractor and just improving the land, and you know, you don't really think, it's relaxing, and as soon as you get off of it, you look what you did, and mm-hmm. knowing that what's going to benefit from it is so, so rewarding. So maybe that's an older thing, but man, I'm sure loving that. I mean, that's what I was doing today. Is we're actually I'm running a mulcher, and we got a half acre of bamboo that's 50 to 60 foot tall bamboo sticks. I mean, these you can't make no cane poles out of these. These are bigger than my arm. I mean, they're like 22 inches around.
No kidding.
The bamboo poles. Oh, it's, yeah.
We don't have anything like that around here.
That's for when you want to go bank pulling for sharks.
Yeah.
Got a Hulk Hogan arms over there.
I know it. I was like, hey, how about I'd like to see Van Damme kick one of these poles.
So let's dive into that land management thing, because I think that's I don't feel like that's a dying thing with like the next generation. I mean, the older I get, I want to do the same thing, like buy a little tractor, and I'm working on buying an old 18 JD 650 right now, you know.
I think we're all into it.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, it's cool. It's interesting. It's one more thing to get you involved in the whole process. And you post a lot on like doing your land management stuff, but
I don't think any tree is safe on your property, T-Bone.
No, I got to be real careful. I mean, because I've only owned a skid steer for about 4 years now, and you know, some of the places right here around the house, I get a little carried away, and I'm like, maybe should have not opened that up. The deer come to eat, but they ain't got no place to bed.
Everything's wood chips all over the place.
Yeah.
What's some of the things that you've done that you feel like made the most impact or positive improvement on your ground?
Well, food plots, for one. You guys know, I mean, you guys are up there where agriculture is king, mm-hmm. whereas for us, agriculture has kind of went by the wayside the last 25 years. And in this portion of the state, I should say, anyway. So what we have here is pine trees. Pine trees are the number one crop. They've bred them to where you can take a seedling that's only 6 to 8 inches tall, and you can take it and go through 3 cuttings, whether it be like not a clear cut, but like a thinning, and then a second thinning, and then a clear cut, all within 20 years. So from, you know, when you see a tree cut down, you know how it kind of, a tear comes to our eyes. Like, man, that tree's been growing for 100 plus years. Down here, we've gotten pine trees down to where you can grow them from 6 to 8 inches tall to full maturity, way bigger than any telephone pole that you've ever seen in 20 years. So they're growing real fast. So that is our cash crop. So I say that because any available field that we had that might have had some soybeans or corn in this portion of the state has all been planted in pine trees. So mm-hmm. we don't have the food that we normally would. So if you do get a piece of land that you buy, or we have leases, a lot of leases, you get on timber company, you go in there to where the loading docks was, and you just fight for any open spot to clear off to plant something so that you have something besides native browse and or the mass crops, which are acorns and stuff, which we don't have nowhere near as many hardwoods as what you guys do. It's mainly pines. And once pines reach a certain maturity, it chokes out any underbrush, and there's nothing underneath there. You might find a few places where a deer can bed, but as far as nutrition for the deer, they don't have it. So we rely heavily on baiting, protein troughs, as well as food plots. So the guy who has food plots is drawing a lot of deer around here. We don't have the harsh winters, but nonetheless, you know, we're fighting and jockeying for that. So putting in, to answer your question, to put in really good food plots, not just planting something that's green to really deep tillage, because the soil is so clay-based and it's really hard compacted. We have to subsoil so that we retain the moisture, so that we retain the nutrients, heavy lime, and make the pH levels right so that you get the higher yields and the increased tonnage so that it'll handle all the browsing. You know, we're allowed to kill 12 deer down here every year, so we have a lot of numbers, and we don't have as much food as you guys do. So, you know, you do plant a little food plot. The guy gets out there and scratches around and plants him a half acres, and they keep it down. It looks like a putting green because the deer keep it down.
Right.
So anything you can do to increase the quality of your food plots to get higher yields and more tonnage is a huge plus. So I've done a lot of that, and as well as, like, you know, with the skid steers, you'll go around and trim the whole edges of the food plot so that you don't have overhanging limbs to where you can get more sunlight, and you can increase the more acreage that the fields have that you are planting. So it's the little things like that, and making putting the food plots, putting the redneck blinds, putting the blinds where you're long-term, rather than maybe it's not a, you know, you see the Drurys do this all the time, and they do a fantastic job of it, but it's if you have your own land, you can create the deer travel corridors to where you want them to be. You know, the land will tell you some of those things, but you can make it to where it'll be something that'll benefit every year after year, whereas, you know, I grew up hunting like so many people have to do. You know, and this is just if you're leasing or land, owning the land, but, you know, you scout out and you have to go in there and which tree are they eating under, whereas this way, the land management practice of it, you can make something. It's harder work in the beginning, but it'll pay huge dividends year after year after year, because the deer are going to get used to it, and it'll be a routine as to how they grow up within the herd.
Interesting. Yeah, I didn't know. I knew a little bit, like, you know, coming from the Midwest. I've been in like Georgia for about 5 minutes, that little sliver when you're going to Chattanooga. I'm like, cool, I'm in Georgia, and then I'm back in Tennessee. So I've never really been in like the, I guess, deep-ish South. I don't even know if it's considered that, but that's how I view it anyway, being from Northwest Illinois. But you always hear like Georgia pines, of course.
People need them 2x4s, you know.
Right. And yep. I picture, like, just like you said, just a bunch of, I don't, timber, but it's not timber hardwoods. So it's just interesting, you know, that we're spoiled a little bit to a point up here where we live in corn and soybean ground. So when we put in plots, it's like, if you can get in like a turnip plot or leave standing beans, like that's our late season gold right there. But I guess we kind of take advantage, or we just don't know any different, really. We have food all the time for our deer. So, and that explains like the body weight, and, you know, we have different soil and genetic and stuff here in the Midwest. So that's when we typically get the giant classic Midwestern bucks, which that, you know, after you explain that makes, you know, that your 161 inch and a 186 inch buck in the same season that much more impressive. So the work you did obviously is
paying off
big time.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm sure that does help some, but it takes great genetics and just age. You know, it's all three of those things. I mean, in you know, you're going to have freaks. I mean, you know, it's just a freak deer. I mean, you just got to take advantage of it. And they just so happened there was two of them for me this year. I might not do it again, even close to that in my lifetime again. But at least I can justify spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on killing two deer.
Hopefully your wife doesn't listen to this.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So I'm talking about, well, and I say that much. I mean, and you know, buying land and why did you buy land? Whereas you could live in an apartment, but you know what I'm saying? If you really sharpened a pencil on it, it's like, wow, venison is expensive.
Right. Yeah. How much per pound? It's like, let's do some math here.
Yeah.
What's Wagyu? Get the hell out of here with that.
Yeah, exactly. exactly.
So hunting Georgia, what do you think, if you had to pick something, and I'm doing this for to see if anything razzes you up a bit, is there anything you absolutely hate about hunting Georgia? Like, or maybe not hate, maybe hate's a strong word. Something you would really like to change about hunting Georgia?
Yeah, grind your gears.
Yeah, let's get them gears grind a little bit.
I was upset. I was a big advocate for them legalizing baiting, and they did that. This was kind of silly. They had the state divided in half. The southern half, you could bait, and then the northern half, you couldn't bait at all. And I thought that was silly. I mean, like, I didn't understand that. But in the last 3 years, we've been able to bait the whole state. And I was right on the border, meaning I'm in the last county, in the northern zone. So therefore I couldn't bait, but you go 15 miles south of me and you could bait. It was kind of silly.
Really?
We're in the middle of the state. Yeah, we're in the what they call the Piedmont region. So, you go an hour south of here and it's huge agriculture, soybeans, cotton, peanuts, peach trees. You get a lot of that. You know, it's a sandier soil. The pine trees don't grow so well, but this Piedmont region has a lot of, like I say, it's sandy, loamy soil down south. And it's easy to plow. It holds a lot of moisture. And you know, you don't, it does better for agriculture. Whereas around here, it's just perfect for pine trees. So pine trees are king in the middle section of Georgia. But anyway, that kind of, I didn't understand that.
They never made clear on why they did it that way.
Well, they said it was because of, you know, Atlanta's in the northern zone and the more population. And they said they was trying it out. So they tried it out for like 10 years in the southern zone. And they were trying it out down there to see how it would work. And, yeah, I mean, it's been wonderful for everybody. I mean, just because you bait doesn't mean it's just honestly, it can make it harder to kill a big buck because it just forces them to be more nocturnal, to be honest with you. But
I've heard that. Like Ohio is a bait state, and I hear that a lot from guys from Ohio.
Yeah, and I'm not wanting. I'm an advocate for baiting for several reasons. One, it helps you get an inventory. But two, the biggest reason is for our youth. You know, we struggle so much trying to keep youth interested in it. And you know, with us, with all the pine trees around here, you can't. And you got single moms. You know, the divorce rate is as high as it's ever been across the country. You got a single mom that's got a 14-year-old boy that wants to start hunting. And all she's got is her uncle's 20 acres, and it's a pine thicket. And she's not allowed to, you know, go buy him two bags of corn every week to put out there so that he can try to hunt and see a deer or something to keep his interest sparked on it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas,
that's a good point.
She can't afford a tractor. She can't afford to go clear these pine trees out and plant a food plot in there for him to hunt over. Whereas if he's got a trail camera, he's interested in more days than just what he's hunting. He's getting an inventory so that when a deer shows up, he's like, oh, that's that old four-pointer I've been seeing. So, and he kind of knows what to expect rather than making a poor judgment on something that he's like, oh, man, that's a big buck. And then turns out it's a buck that he didn't want to shoot or a buck that's not legal because they have to be 4 points on one side here in Georgia. So, you know, I mean, there's just so many advantages. And even if you don't see a deer, you got corn out there, you see a raccoon, you see a possum, you see squirrels, you're seeing activity. So it keeps their interest up, you know. So
yeah,
I think the pros far outweigh the cons. And even if you're hunting soybean fields or corn or food plots, you're basically hunting bait. You just didn't pour it out of a bag.
Right. That's right. Yeah. I love that topic. You know, So from our perspective, T-Bone, so in Illinois, and I'm sure you know all this because you've hunted all over, in Illinois, we can't supplemental feed at all. Like,
yeah.
At all. And especially now when, you know, this morning, Eric said it was negative 14.
It was negative 18 when I left for work this morning.
And, you know, we just got, I don't know how much snow we've gotten in the last 2 weeks. You know, it's
going to be brutal for like 2 weeks straight.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're not getting a break from this brutal cold, the snow. And, you know, I'm sure they got fields they can paw around through, but when everything's iced over and frozen, I mean, we just feel for them. Where Doug and Iowa across the Mississippi in Iowa, they can supplemental feed right now, which I think. And you guys can't bait during season.
Not during season.
But no. I wish Illinois would just jump on that program with the supplemental feed thing, but we just haven't.
Yeah, we need to be able to feed like right now. We're losing deer every day right now.
Yeah,
well, like
bad.
You said, we had that we had 3 inches of ice really early season, so they can't even get down to the crop.
Well, imagine living out there and getting soaking wet from the rain, and then it freezes, and then you get 10 inches of snow, and then it drops to negative 18. That's odds are against them.
Oh, I totally agree with you guys 100%. It's funny you was asking me about Georgia rules, and I mean, if I give it some thought, I could probably come up with a few that are kind of silly. But you know, I think we're fortunate to get to hunt, and I don't mean to just pick on one state, but we're fortunate to get to hunt a lot of states, and I'm not saying I know all the rules inside and out. I don't, but I do know. If you had to put a gun to my head and pick the state with the silliest rules, I'd have to say you guys in Illinois have got the silliest rules. That, yeah, 100%. I mean, there's a good half a dozen to a dozen that I can think of, like the locking your bow up and can't bow hunt during gun season, and that's ridiculous. So,
you can now, I think. I don't know about every county.
They changed it a couple of years ago.
You can now with a valid. You have to have your.
You have to have a gun permit.
You have to have the tag for that gun season. Yeah. But that's new. And then, you know, I always say Illinois, yeah, we know. We suck at everything but deer hunting. Even then, some things suck there too. But let us have our big deer, and and that's all we got going for us.
I got a question real quick. T-Bone, you said you guys have a four-point restriction. You guys ever see, like, monster sixes that aren't legal that just keep living and living? You ever find those giant six-pointers down there?
Oh, yeah, it's funny you said that because I was at the parts house today and the guy was showing me a video and he goes, what do you think about this deer? And honestly, this deer was, he'd probably gross in the high 130s and it was just a clean six. I mean, a deer it was so old, he needed a patch on his eye and a walking cane. I mean, he was so old and needed shot, but, you know, and that's what I said. I said, you know, that's not legal here in this county. I mean, in some counties it's legal to shoot in, but there's probably 15 or so counties across the whole state that are trophy counties or quality management counties, and has to be 4 points on one side. So, you know, in this county where that deer was, you can't shoot it. And I'm like, man, that one, to me, that would be a trophy. And then two, it needs to go. You know, you don't want that. If you are doing on a management program, you don't want that one spreading genes anyway. But, man, a big six-pointer like that, I would consider a trophy.
Oh, 100%.
I do. They're so rare. You don't. I mean, back here in Illinois, it's just rare to see a big six. So when we see one, we almost freak out more than if we see a big 8-pointer. Yeah. A big six is pretty rare back here.
Yeah. Yeah. There was one hunting on the ground, or hunting. There was one living on the ground we hunted in Indiana this year that Eric and I were on, and the neighbor ended up shooting it. I think he's pushing 130 as a clean six, and that's a monster in my opinion.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't know if you guys remember, and don't take this as me tooting my own horn, but a couple years ago, I shot a deer. It's the heaviest weight deer I've ever shot over in Kansas. It was a 6-pointer. He was 4 on one side, 2 on the other, and he had 28-inch main beams. He ended up grossing. He had some barnacles around the base, so he actually had more. But mainframe, he was just a 6-pointer with barnacles around the bottom, and he grossed 149.
Oh, wow. Golly.
Yeah.
Did you mount that deer?
Oh, yeah. Well, he's being mounted now. Actually, it was a deer that we had so much history with. I did a spot and stalk on him 2 years prior, and then the year after that, Nick shot him actually in the back, and he went off and actually made a scrape, and he lived. And then the next year is when I shot him. So we knew he was 8.5 years old. He didn't have any teeth, and he weighed 316 pounds.
Holy crap!
I love it. That's awesome.
Just a tank of a deer, and I said, I've got to, and Waddell and Nick and the guy scored him, and he grossed, you know, counting all the barnacles and all, he grossed 149. But still, even if you just counted the 6 points, he would be a Pope and Young. I was like, golly, I got to mount that deer.
Oh, that's incredible. Yeah, it's not the same as shooting like a, you know, a 180s buck, but it's like a close second as far as just a kind of like a freaking specimen of like with a quality or size or whatever.
Yeah, any redneck could be proud of it.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, right.
Hey, I get a full body mount on that son of a gun.
So, 300
some pounds.
With Nick's arrow in the back strap.
Yeah,
right.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And put a saddle on him so the kids could ride him when they come over.
Right. Put springs around him and put on one of those old stands like those old horses.
Yep.
Hey, so Georgia, you said something you dislike. What's something you really love about hunting Georgia?
You don't freeze your balls off, man. It's nice down here. Yeah, it's rough. It is rough in September and the first part of October. It's really, really hot. But the older I get, I can handle it better. Bow hunting and putting on so many clothes, man, I just hate it. It restricts you so bad, and you just, you know, it's harder to climb, and, you know, I'm not as agile as I used to be 20 years ago. So it sure is nice, you know, this time, like today, you know, y'all were talking about how cold it was, and y'all don't beat me up on it today, but it was 68 degrees today here. I had to come out of my sweatshirt by 10:30 this morning. You believe that?
Oh, it was almost 80 degrees warmer down there than it was here.
I know it. It's going to rain the rest of the week, but
poor you.
Feel bad for you.
It's going to snow here.
So. We don't have another trade show for like 2 weeks. We could probably come down there and, you know, occupy the basement or whatever.
Right. Guys, come on. We'll do podcasts for the next 2 weeks down in the basement.
That would be fun. We might as well come down there, man. It's going to be brutal. You know, the worst thing that's going to happen, you just got to rinse, you know, the grime from the rainwater off your truck. Meanwhile, I got like a foot of ice still riding on the roof of my truck. Yeah. I've been driving 85 mile an hour to work and back.
Man, I having to do so many banquets up that way, usually in the wintertime in the past, you know, 15 years, I just don't know how y'all do it. I swear I don't. I mean, I was born in Ohio, but we have to travel up there. And Nick lives in Minnesota, you know, and he's going through it. I'm like, I would be suicidal. I understand why there's so many bars up there.
There's nothing else to do.
You know what? I don't know why that's never clicked with me, but the further you go north,
the more bars there are.
You hit Wisconsin and Minnesota, they like to drink.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. There's nothing else to do up there besides ice fish and drink.
Got to keep the sanity somehow.
Well, it warms you up.
Wait, right. We don't have bars down here, guys. We do not have bars. We don't, you know.
Like Dry County or what?
No, there's plenty of drinking goes on, but there's no bars. It's all tailgate stuff or in someone's basement or a back porch. The weather's so good. Nobody, I mean, you might find a bar in like a Red Lobster or an Applebee's, but
Applebee's,
to say that you know, yeah.
I'll make it work.
But to say, yeah, you're not going to stop by. There's no independent bars. There's no bars down here at all.
That's crazy.
I cannot tell you where a bar is within 80 miles in any direction of my house. I can't
tell
you where one bar is.
See, that's cool.
I can tell
you
40 within 2 miles.
Yeah.
There.
We had eight in my hometown growing up. We had 8 or 10 of them at one time.
How many people lived in that town?
Yeah. 1,500.
That's it? And you had 8 or 10 bars?
Yeah. We were right on the river, so it was like there was a reason for people to come there. But, yeah, no shit. When I was 16, there was 8 bars to go play pool in.
Yeah, we don't have bars. We don't – I mean, nobody does that. I mean, like when I've spent time up there, you know, because our offices used to be there in Ottawa, Illinois for a little while. And we'd go up there for meetings and stay for a week. And that was just commonplace. Shut her down at 5, go to the bar for a couple hours, go get something to eat, and then go home.
Yep.
I mean, I would have a bad problem if I lived up here. I couldn't hang with y'all.
Well, that's the thing, you know. COVID shut all that down, you know what I mean? So all these small bar businesses were struggling. I mean, a lot of them just said screw it and opened anyway. But I mean, we're doing – we have our bow shoot in June, or just the Working Class Bow Hunter shoot, which, by the way, we spell it S-H-E-W-T, like old T-Bone used to spell it on the Monster Bucks videos. And people think we're just idiots. Like
we spelled it wrong on accident.
Yeah, that we literally misspelled it. So – they don't get the nostalgia of the joke, but we're doing our after party.
But they remember it. But they remember it, don't they?
Exactly it. Exactly
you
it.
You need to bring old Sadie up one of these years and show us how to shoot.
Put on a clinic.
Should do that.
Yeah, she's semi-retired, but she might fling an air or two.
But we have an after party. You know, granted, this is in July. We have an after party at a local tavern that's in a town of, I don't know, maybe 500 people. But kind of as a way to, you know, I guess that this might be in my excuse for having an after party at a bar after the shoot is we're kind of supporting local biz in a way. You know, our local archery club and then the small tavern and stuff like that. Those guys were hurting through all this. Maybe not so much the archery club, but the bar for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's just the weather, you know, like, because the weather's so great. I mean, nobody wants to be inside now. I mean, that's why indoor leagues don't do well down here. Nobody, you don't shoot inside because the weather's so nice in the winter most of the time. You can, that's when you want to be outside. I think a indoor league would do better down here in the summertime when you're sweating your balls off.
There you go.
Yeah. It, 100 degrees with 110% humidity, that's when you want to be inside shooting your bow.
Yeah, no kidding. That's right. Yeah. I guess, I don't know, I'd rather be cold, I think, than hot like that. But
yeah, I tell people that, but I guess the older I get, I'm not that way. I tell them that, you know, you can only get so naked when you're hot, but you can put more clothes on to get warm.
right, that's exactly
you're
it.
You're not wrong there.
That's exactly it. So let's switch gears a little bit. Are you a big taxidermy guy? Like, do you mount a lot of stuff?
Well, yeah, I do. I do have a lot of mounts, you know, fortunately, because of all the places we've got to go hunting. But I'm not complaining, but, you know, you run out of room a little bit, and you just can't mount everything. But I'm a huge fan of European mounts. I mean, like, I've got a lot of European mounts, so I really like them. But that Mongo 6-pointer I was telling you about, and then the 3 bucks I killed this year, they're all getting mounted. So mm-hmm. I've been having to jockey around. I had to get creative about where I got a mountain lion I killed in 2016, and it just come back from the taxidermy in June, and it's been sitting in my garage since June. I said, I've got to find a place to put it, and finally I cleared out. It's right beside, actually the tail is cutting off our big screen TV in our living room.
That's awesome.
That's my people.
Do you ever think about building this big immaculate man cave, kind of like Nick's building?
Well, I do have a man cave, and I've got some more room down there. When I built my house, you know, it was about the time we started Bone Collector. So I don't have cathedral ceilings and I don't have real tall walls. I got 9-foot walls on my upstairs and 8-foot walls down below. So, you know, anything like elk or, you know, pedestal mounts, I just don't have a lot of room for. So mm-hmm. I do have a man cave, and I've got a lot of mounts in there, and I've probably got about 65 European mounts down there.
Is your man cave the in all the archery videos you guys do on the Bone Collector YouTube, is that your basement?
Yeah. Yeah, that's my man cave, and then I have my archery shop right beside that with an indoor range.
Oh, very cool.
Oh, that's awesome.
So, that's sweet.
Yeah, so I've thought about it, you know, but I'm like, man, I just see so many people, like, I mean, I don't know how to say this, but, you know, like, I've got all these mounts, and I treasure them. They're just so, so precious to me, but I'm like, everybody like Nick has built his whole house around the mount, and, you know, and I'm like, God, it's hard to, you know, fathom spending $150,000 on a room to hold your mounts. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like
maybe that's just me being a tight ass, I guess. I don't know.
Ross just goes, I get it. Ross just got done spending I don't know how much on his man cave.
His is a whole barn.
Yeah. No, T-Bone, it can get out of hand pretty quick where –
I spent a lot on my man cave. I did, you know, and that was about 10 years ago I built it. But I'm about out of room down there, so I'm having to get creative. And the wife has drawn the line. There is going to be no furry mounts in our bedroom. And I'm like, I was trying to get the mountain lion in there, but she wouldn't have it.
Right above your headboard.
Yeah. Yep, I got to be real selective. Like I've got a full mounted bear, and I got and boy, those things take up a lot of room. So shoulder mount deer, luckily, I mean, whitetails are my favorite, so you can put quite a few of them on one wall. So I've still got quite a bit of room for them, but if I was to, you know, kill a moose or, you know, a really big elk that I needed mounted, I'm going to have to get creative somehow.
You just paid Nick's like a rental fee and put it up at his place for a while and just like get visitation rights.
I'll be honest with you, Nick owes us because we've had to house all of his stuff until he just built his house.
Well, there you go.
10, 15 years, we've been housing his stuff all over the place. So
you got to pay up now.
It's time.
He failed to mention that when we did his podcast, just for the record.
Oh, yeah, man, he's got a nice place. And we haven't seen the whole thing. He showed us some pictures, but I know it means so much to him. You know, taxidermy work is just so precious to him. And he's got so many different unique critters. He's got, two brown bears from Russia, and he's got so many rams and stuff like that. So, you know, of the three of us, by far, Nick would be the next Jim Shockey for sure. He's the world traveler.
I think if I went on as many hunts and all that as you guys, I think I would be a taxidermy nut just the same. I know Chandler, you would be for sure.
Oh, yeah, I can't get away from it. If I shoot a little buck, I'm like, man, do I mount him or do I not mount him? Like, I've got, 25 deer heads, but I need one more.
I love them.
Yeah.
I love them. But whatever.
And that's the good thing about European mounts is, you can display them. I like that you can display them and, put them on an angle so that you can – and then you can mount them later if you want to. If you like, I should have mounted that deer, and then you can mount them if you want to. Or the good thing is you can grab them and you can hold them, and spin them around and really admire them and stuff like that. So there's some advantages to those too.
That is a big advantage to a European mount. Like there's something about being able to pick up the rack and handle. That's why shed antlers are so fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, that is the bonus to the Euro, because I guess you could always have your hides tanned and stored. And then when you need to, get them mounted up.
Or most taxidermists always has extra hides laying around too.
Yeah.
I'm big on original cape. I like seeing that deer on the wall in the form, wearing the exact same cape that he was wearing. So I'm big on keeping original cape.
Yeah, double throat patches and things like that.
Oh yeah,
yeah, I agree with that.
Super nice. And then I'm sure we've all had you're just like, oh, man, I need to mount that deer. Yeah, I really mount that deer. And then, 4 years later, you're like, I shouldn't have mounted that one, and I should mount this one.
Right.
Once you've mounted it, it's like, I should have saved a little money there and mounted one this year. And, man, why did I mount that deer 4 years ago? That kind of thing. So,
right.
Mounter's remorse.
Mounter's remorse.
That's right.
I don't have any of that, really. I got a bunch of my deer I killed when I was young, but those are kind of cool ones to put in my kids' room, I think. So
yeah, I've got a couple of them too, and boy, taxidermy's come a long ways in the last 25 years, hasn't it?
It's funny, isn't it? It's crazy how much better the forms get and the skill levels get and all that. But it's a cool art form, man. I appreciate it. I look at my mounts every day with the same sparkle in my eyes I did when I first got them home. I love them.
Yeah, I couldn't. I don't know if you guys know, but when I started, before I was in the industry, right out of high school, I worked for Mercedes-Benz and I did upholstery work. So I covered stuff in leather and I hand sewed and all that stuff. And I got to thinking, I want to do something in the outdoor industry. And I was shooting bows and stuff, but I never went down a path yet. I was still working in Atlanta at Mercedes-Benz.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, man, taxidermy, that's what I want to do. So in the evenings, I started helping a guy do taxidermy work. And I thought, that's right up my alley, because I know how to do upholstery work and I'll do a taxidermy work. And I worked for him for probably a month, three or four nights a week, and sitting up there, and I was hand sewing, and I was doing okay. I mean, he even said I was doing good, but I said, this is not for me, man. There's no way I can do this the rest of my life. So yeah, just all the nastiness that you got to deal with. I mean, not that I don't mind doing that, because we always have to skin our deer and stuff like that, but I'm like, man, hats off to the creative and the design and the skill levels and the artistry that the taxidermists have. So I'm glad I tried it, because I answered that question. It's not going to be for me.
So, yeah.
You have to sew eyeballs into a Mercedes-Benz seat.
It'd be
kind of wild if you did, though.
a little different.
T-Bone just sneaks a few deer eyes in there or something.
That's the T-Bone special.
Right.
Yeah. I switched gears to fletching arrows, and then away we went.
That's awesome. Yeah, I think when you bought the Mercedes-Benz, I think we went – that might have been the first episode we did back in the day. I think you went into detail on all that, if I remember correctly. It's been a while.
Yeah.
But
– Yeah, I started working there when I was in high school, and then out of high school wasn't too much on grades, and I just kept working there. And then I was like, I need to do something, so I went to heating and air school for 2 years, a vocational school. I did that went to school for 2 years, and about the time I was ready to graduate, I was like, man, I do not want to do this the rest of my life. So I've never worked in the heating and air conditioning field at all. I got a 2-year degree and I made my mom proud, but I never worked. Actually, Nick says it in seminars all the time. He says the only T-Bone's never worked in the heating and air conditioning. In fact, the only unit he's ever pulled is his own.
That's hilarious.
That's great.
That's funny you bring up that. Like, that's what all my brother-in-laws do. They're all in the heating and air business, which, you know, I guess if you live in the Midwest, the heating and air part's working out good. Down there, it's just the air.
And that's what Waddell was into, too, right, before he started up?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure was, yeah. He was doing calling contests. He went to heating and air conditioning school, and his grandma was so proud of him because the place he was working for gave him his own truck. You know, it's like, you've made it, son.
Yeah.
You've got your own van. You know, you're the man now. And then he had it for about 6 months and then quit to go run a camera and call turkeys and stuff for Bill Jordan and stuff. And his grandmother was heartbroken at the time. Like, you've just thrown away a great career, and, you know, and then, but of course, you know, you don't know how things are going to turn out. And
right.
Then all of a sudden he's in the Waffle House menu, you know?
Right. Yeah. Then you've made it.
Then you've made it down there.
How long have you known Waddell and Nick? I mean, how did you guys all meet? We might have covered this, but I'm just kind of like timelining it.
Yeah, I opened up my store. I lived about an hour and a half north of here, just outside of it, just west of Atlanta. And I moved down here in 1994 and opened up an archery shop. The Better Hunting and Fishing is south of Atlanta. So I moved down this way, get out of the hustle and bustle. I had worked 2 years in an archery shop after I quit Mercedes-Benz just to learn the retail side of things. Opened up my own store, moved down here, and it was tough, you know, tough beginnings. But I had a reputation for being a tournament archer, and then, you know, therefore people came to our shop and, you know, would want to have us working on our bows and stuff. And he lived about 35 minutes away in Manchester, but he was working for Realtree at the time, and I'd met him then, and, you know, we kind of knew each other, but we didn't, like, know each other. And then through Realtree, 95, 96, met him and David Blanton and started doing all their work for the guys at Realtree, setting their bows up and any celebrity that they might have had. And then about that same time is when Nick, being from South Dakota, he was guiding hunters at 7J Outfitters in Wyoming, and he had met David and started running camera. And then we had shared like when he had come for camera school, I met him, and me and him and Nick, me, Nick, and Michael were all about the same age and very similar personalities, and we hit it off. And then after they'd asked me to be in the Monster Bucks in like 98, 99, and, you know, I thought, well, you know, this is my 15 minutes of fame. And then they started asking me to do more and more, and then, you know, me and Nick and Michael shared camps a few times, and then Realtree Road Trip started, so we started doing more, and we always stayed in touch, and we hung out and, you know, did things even off the camera, and then we started Bone Collector in basically 2007. So that's the kind of the short version. But
yeah, no, that's awesome, man. I love that. It's cool to, like, just imagine how that all escalated into what it is, because I view you guys as the biggest in the game as far as quality of show, entertaining.
Is that
like
a fat joke?
Hey, if you take it that way, it is, but that's not how I meant it. Hey, that's all on you.
Yeah.
But I really do. I like, and, you know, of course, I grew up watching you guys for the Monster Bucks video, so my perspective might be a little different. You know, everybody grows up on something different when they're younger, but
yeah.
I mean, does your guys' like family, or maybe not like immediate family, like distant family, like does your wife's like family understand? I know they probably do now, but did they in the beginning get like what was going on with like this newfound career or fame or whatever the hell you want to call it?
You know, I think in the beginning they just thought, you know, as long as he don't, you know, have some wild dream. Of course, you never know. You know, you don't know what's going to happen each year. But
right,
my wife and in-laws and family, they it was a little different for me. Because I traveled so much all through the 90s shooting tournaments. I shot, you know, professionally. So every ASA tournament, IBO tournament through the Midwest, I mean, I would shut the store down or, you know, have somebody work the store. And I was traveling, shooting and competing all the way up till the early 2000s. So it was just a switch of gears, basically. You know, I didn't know what was going to happen. So when I'd sold my store, you know, and Realtree was, I sold my store in 2006, and, you know, Realtree was asking more commitments from me, and I started doing appearances and seminars and stuff like that. So it just started more and more and more. And, I mean, it was so slow and so gradual. You know, so many people like you guys, you know, said you've watched this, you know, from the Monster Bucks days. But, you know, a lot of the younger kids and stuff, they just see us on TV now, you know, over the last 8 or 9 years, and they just think, man, these guys, you know, kind of just blew onto the scene, but they don't realize right. that, like, me, Michael, and Nick have all been, you know, it's a passion. We wouldn't change it anyway, but we've been kind of grinding it since, you know, the mid-90s in this industry. So
yeah, that's a good point.
Or early 90s. Yeah. But like my uncles and my dad said, you know, before I was choosing a career path, because so many people, when you're a teenager or in the early 20s, you don't know what you want to do for a living. But they told me, pursue a passion and you'll never feel like you worked a day in your life. And, you know, after I graduated heating and air conditioning school, you know, I said, you know what, I'm going to try this because I loved archery. I couldn't get enough of it. I'm going to quit my job. I took a huge pay cut, went to Fletch and Arrows, and, you know, I already knew how to work on bows, but I went to do it on a retail level, and I'm like, I'm going to try this. If I fall flat on my face, I can do HVAC or I can go back to Mercedes-Benz, but while I'm young, I'm going to pursue a passion, and, you know, I don't have a mortgage to worry with. I was still living at home. I didn't have a wife, a kids, or anybody, you know, major responsibilities. It was just my own neck I was sticking out. I said, I'm going to try this. If I fall flat on my face, I'll go back to doing this, but now's the time to try it. I don't want to be 35 or 40 years old and regret trying it. And I will give my dad and my uncles credit. They, you know, they were right. You, to anybody that pursues their passion, you don't feel like you've worked a day in your life. You know, I mean, you know, I'm sure you guys don't feel like, you know, this podcast is much work. It's a joy. It's like, oh man, we get to do a podcast this, you know, tonight. It's going to be great to hang out, you know? So
exactly.
That's the way we've always felt like,
yeah, if it, you know, sucked, we would have stopped after that first episode we did with you.
Yeah, so, you know, anything, I've even lived by that. As things change, you know, I'm like, you know, if it's not fun anymore, I'm not going to do it. You know, you save some pennies so that you don't, you've got a little nest egg behind you so that you're not on skid row if you miss one day of work, and you just do things that you're passionate about. And if you're passionate about it, you're gonna provide a really good product, and people are gonna see that, and they're gonna enjoy, you know, watching you, or you're gonna enjoy doing what you're doing. Whether it's, you know, if you enjoy doing plumbing and do, you know, you're the best plumber around, you know, you're gonna enjoy doing it. It's like, man, I can't wait to go fix some faucets today. So,
right. Now, if somebody loves it that much, you know,
somebody's out there.
Water main break, you're standing in a pile of shit all day.
They're like, hell yeah, this is the best. Yeah. Hey, you gotta have them guys, man. Shout out to those guys.
Exactly. So, you know, pursuing the passion just sure does makes it easier to put 80 hours into your craft, you know, or your work, you know, whenever you love it. Whereas,
yeah,
you know, if you're staring at the clock and can't wait to get the hell out of there at 5:01, you know, that might not be the best career for you. But
yeah,
unfortunately, so many people get responsibilities and they have to do that. So we want to make sure that, you know, they enjoy the time that they do get to be in the woods and they do get to enjoy the outdoors. You know, hats off for all the responsibilities of the mom and dads that are out there, and they can enjoy their free time and their recreational time.
For sure. No, I love that. I love that whole background story, that build up, because, you know, we're trying to grow this to whatever it grows into, but if it doesn't, we're still going to do it. So it's like, you know, you have these goals, you picture it, where it could go or where you want it to go, but you work hard either way. And if it happens, it happens. If not, it's, I mean, a lot of it's just like, however it just ends up, you know, if there's, you don't have a lot of right. control over some of the, I guess, fate or however you view it or whatever you believe in. But, either way, we're hustling. So,
hey, on, did I notice, I hated to interrupt you, but, and that's a great point, but did I notice that y'all are doing it now in a larger room? It looked like y'all are got like a, I know you had the working class, you know, the little studio room that was kind of just like a table and just enough room for your chairs around there. But now it seems like you got a big room. Am I right by saying that?
Yeah. So, well, maybe. I don't know exactly what you're referring to, but I think, I moved recently within the last year or so, a little over a okay. year. So we got a little bigger studio. So we've done, you know, done everything, our monitor on the wall, upgraded mics, did some add-ons to the table. So yeah, It's much larger than it was from our first studio.
A lot bigger.
It's a lot bigger. Like, we have, you can get up and walk around someone to get to the bathroom. So before, you had to, like,
everyone had to stand up for you to go take a piss.
Suck it in.
I think for a time, someone would get up. Like, if you were where you were at, Eric, you'd have to get under, crawl underneath the table while we're recording and get to the door and walk out to pee. Now, we're kind of like, look at us, you know, we got like four extra foot. It's a little bigger than that, but we're working now on a destination studio, and that's just what I'll say now on the podcast, but we're working on a place where people can come to as an experience for Working Class Bowhunter shows.
Oh, that's great.
So we're working. You have to come on up when we get that done.
Yeah,
so.
Be our first guest.
I'll do it. Just let me know. I got plenty of frequent flyer miles I need to use, so let's do it.
Yeah, we got bars up here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'll have to experience that.
See what that's like. We got hams on draft, I think, at one of them, so you get to see what that's like. hey, I want to close with one thing, and maybe we've asked you this before, but who right now is your bow hunting idol?
It's my bow hunting idol has been the same. I mean, I respect and look up to a lot of them. You know what I mean? But my bow hunting idol is Randy Ulmer. And that's not just from a, I mean, he and I are like the farthest polar opposite from each other, but nonetheless, we've been friends from way back when. I kind of idolized his mental game. From the early 90s, as a target archer, as a 3D archer, and then also as a bow hunter. I just, I gained so much from following him, and he had some instructional VCR tapes back in there. That's really showing how old I am. But nonetheless, I couldn't get enough of following him, and just basically was a sponge to all his knowledge and what he had went through, and I guess mimicked things that he's done, and it really helped me as far as being a successful target archer and archer period. So he's one. You gotta respect Levi Morgan, Dan McCarthy, Jeff Hopkins. There's a bunch of them out there that I've. Yeah, Levi Morgan is just. I don't even think he's human, really. I mean.
As a robot.
Seriously.
The word's still out.
Yeah. And he's been shooting even back. I mean, I remember shooting with him. He was shooting in the kids' classes, young adult, way back when. And this was in the early 2000s and stuff. And I'm sitting there thinking, man, he's been shooting forever. He's got to be close to my age. And then I, you know, I see and talk to him, and he's like, yeah, I'm 31. I'm like, you suck. he's still so young, and he's won a gazillion shooters of the year and tournaments and stuff like that. But no, it couldn't happen to a nicer guy. He's just super, super nice, super humble, great family, good Christian guy. I look up to him a lot too, but
he's like the John Jones of archery.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Except without the steroids blemish on his record.
Fred Eichler's one, you know, he's great to watch. I mean, you love his enthusiasm, and the man's killed the, Grand Slam, the Super Slam with a recurve. I mean, think about that, man.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So, amazing. Hardworking, good family guy, and just still gets excited over shooting a forky. So it's
it is refreshing to watch.
Yep.
Hey, real quick. Okay, so I thought that was the last one, but I got one more. This is something you and I have in common. I find, like, we went out to dinner in Wisconsin at one of the shows, and we sat there and bullshitted about fighting the whole time. And just so I think every time we get together in person, we kind of have like a side conversation where everybody, you know, does whatever they're doing. We're talking about like, hey, so who do you think so-and-so should fight? What do you think about this Dustin Poirier, Conor McGregor thing? Like, what do you think happens next? Do you think they do a trilogy or what happens?
Well, I think they probably will do a trilogy on that. I know Dustin Poirier will because of that's a good payday anytime Conor McGregor's involved. Oh, yeah. But I don't really know. I don't know who I would like to see fight for the belt on that. I mean, Poirier and Chandler really impressed me when he fought. I mean, like, man, he's an animal. But you know, he's only got one fight under his belt as a UFC fighter.
Right. There's talk. I saw an interview today with Daniel Cormier and aerial that they're talking the trilogy for the belt with Connor and Poirier.
Yeah, well,
I don't think it should be for the belt, but I feel like Poirier should have the belt.
Yeah, I do too. I kind of do too. But you know, nobody's talking about Oliveira either.
Right.
You know, him and Poirier and Chandler. Those are the three that have the best shot at, or those are the ones that should be fighting it out for the belt. I don't think Connor's deserving. So, I mean, I like to see Connor fight. Don't get me wrong. I'm like everybody else, but I don't think he's at the level to where he should be fighting for the belt.
I agree. I didn't know if you felt strongly about that division or not. It's like it's full of killers right now. So I just wanted to. I haven't got to check in with you on it for a while.
Yeah, and I can't wait for John Jones to fight heavyweight. It's going to be interesting. You know, Stipe and I forget the guy's name. They're going to fight in March, I think.
Oh yeah, I'm drawing a blank too. I've just been paying attention to 155 so much that I've kind of blanked on everybody else.
Gosh, what's his name? Anyway, Angola? No.
I'll find out.
Nagana.
Francis?
Yeah, Nagana.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's Stipe Miocic and Nagana. They're fighting in March. And then I don't think John Jones needs to go for the belt right off the fly, but I'd like to see him up against a Black Beast or Volkov, one of them. Here soon.
I'm trying to find the. I'm trying to pull it up. But which one is this? February 13th, February 20th, March 6th. Oh, is that March 6th? Well, dang it. Yeah, okay. Nagano. Yeah, I don't know how to say it. Is that Francis Nagano or do I got to mix up with somebody else?
Yeah. No, it's Francis Nagano.
Yeah, gotcha. Yeah, those scary dudes, man. I don't know. 155 is scary enough. I don't think I need. I want to think about heavyweight guys. Yeah, Saturday, March 27th is that fight.
Yeah, and I'm about tired of hearing Nate Diaz. He's just mouthy. Not that
he's been mouthy for decades.
Oh, I know it. And the only thing that Nate's got going for him is that he does have I think his skull's got to be at least a half inch thicker than anybody else.
Oh, yeah. Dude, scar tissue.
Can't knock him out.
Yeah, unbelievable, yeah.
Well,
so
155 is stacked. I had to just get your opinion. Sorry, I was trying to pull up 155 division on the UFC website, but it's we live in the middle of nowhere here, so it's like painful to pull up anything on the internet.
Yeah, and Justin Gaethje, don't forget about that, even though he's one to think about on there too. I mean, I know he lost to
Poirier. Well, he lost to Poirier and Khabib. Gaethje's probably my favorite right now in the division. I just like his attitude and the way he fights.
Yeah, I do too. And I wish Khabib would come back. I mean, I really
I hate
do.
Khabib
I don't know why.
Personally. I hate him. I don't.
You do?
Yeah, I can't stand him. He just lays on people the whole time. I can't stand it. I want to see people scrap it out. You know.
Yeah, I agree. You gotta, it's different than what, you know, as far as action pack, but you gotta appreciate his dominance. And then, man, I love watching him and DC go back and forth, man. That is comical.
Yeah, I mean, I respect him, definitely do, but I guess I want the, I just know he's gonna win every time, and I think that's why I hate him, you know?
Yeah, it's almost like Dominic Cruz. Like, he aggravates me to watch him because all he does is moves around and he scores points, but there's no horsepower behind his punches. It's just like, yeah, you got a point, but, you know, all you're doing is dancing and aggravating people, and you're not really hitting them hard.
Yeah, yeah. That's why I like Gaethje, I think. Like, he's there to make some money and get it over with and put on a show. It's kind of cool.
And it hurts me to hear Justin Gaethje talk, too, because, man, I know he needs some nose work because he cannot breathe, man. He is such a mouth breather, man. He's like, sounds like I'm going to age myself, a slee stack. So, there, everybody that's listening, I want you to Google what a slee stack is, and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about.
I don't
about.
Even know what that is. Do you, Chandler?
No,
you're the oldest
in
here.
I don't.
None of us know.
Yep. All right. Well, when we get off, that's the homework for working class. And everybody listening, you got to go Google what a slee stack is. And it's the Land of the Lost. It's a TV show when I was a kid. And a slee stack's on there, and you'll laugh like crazy. Okay. And I want to see everybody's got to post a picture of a slee stack we'll on their social media and tag me in it.
Okay. I don't know if our listeners are doing
that. I don't even know how to spell
that. Well, Google. We'll correct it for you. So our listeners are going to Google that, post it, and tag you.
Yep, and tag Working Class Bow Hunter and tag T-Bone.
And tag Justin Gaethje in there.
Yeah.
He's going to want to kick our asses.
As a living flea stack.
Yeah, tag T-Bone in that. Don't tag us in there. I don't want to get, like, I don't want to be at a bar in Colorado and Justin Gaethje walks in and just kicks the shit out of me.
I know it. Yeah, and then make sure you jump on YouTube and watch at least a 10-minute episode of Land of the Lost and the Flea Stacks.
Okay.
Land of the Lost.
We'll look that up right after this episode.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, man. I appreciate it.
Guys, man, we appreciate it. We always do. It's always a joy. Too bad we ain't too close together, man. I'd love to be sitting there with y'all every week.
Well, we'll figure something out here sooner or later. I'd hate to wait till the next trade show season to get together, but we'll just keep in touch, man. We'll figure something out.
That sounds good, man. Anytime. I appreciate everybody. And let's everybody keep their head on right, and hopefully we'll be back to some kind of normal for long.
I think so.
Yeah, hopefully.
So, all right, everyone, thank you so much for listening. You know what to do. Go shoot your bow. We love you.